Support for today's episode comes from ZipRecruiter. Finding the right hire for your open role the old-fashioned way can feel like trying to find a needle in a haystack. But there's a better way with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful technology zeroes in on people with the correct skills and experience for your job and actively invites these people to apply. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOX. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Modern League Podcast. I am Steve Seipel, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. So how are you guys doing this week?
Pretty good.
Baseball's actually here, so that's nice.
Yes. Getting real tired of the slushy gray bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Not optimal.
I say this as someone who likes winter, but in the city, the snow just immediately turns into disgusting gunk.
Yeah. It's nice when it first snows.
Like, yeah.
It looks nice then. And then
I would argue it's nice when it's snowing and then is terrible immediately upon hitting the ground.
Right.
That's fair.
Stay on like trees so it gives everything like a nice white effect.
If it snows overnight, it's nice because then you have that time period before all the cars are out and turning it into the aforementioned gray mush. But if it snows during the day like it did yesterday, it's just, it's on the ground now and it's disgusting.
Well, that makes you have your Olympic jumping of the ice slush puddles.
Oh, right.
And that will segue to our promote extend trade for today. Because back in 1980, we had the 1980 Olympics at Lake Placid, obviously. And on this date, the biggest upset, is it the biggest? Maybe it might be the biggest upset in sports history took place when the U.S. national hockey team beat the Soviet Union 4-3.
I think that's the biggest upset in sports history.
Yeah, I think so.
They made a whole movie about it, you know?
Starring Kurt Russell.
Basically, for all of the millennials, the Generation Z people, I don't know, the idiots out there that don't actually know like what we're talking about, but the U.S. team was a bunch of like ragtag college kids, and the Soviet team was basically like hardened professionals. They hadn't lost a single medal game in like 20 years.
A single game, period.
Yeah, like they were, when we talk about like dynasties, they were the dynasty. And the U.S. team somehow beat them.
Trying to come up with a baseball analogy, but there honestly isn't as dominant a team in baseball history as that Russian hockey team was.
No.
Like, it's insanity. It's like basically make a team of like solely of top 20 players, and then that team's gonna lose to a bunch of first round picks, basically.
It's like the early 1990s like dream team from basketball, but just imagine that team always playing for like decades.
And if you lose, you go to Gulag.
Right. So the extra is not to lose.
And they lost to, like, 2 NHL players and, like, a bunch of random guys.
Yeah. But adding to the mystique of all that, I mean, you have that. And then adding to the mystique was Al Michaels' call, which is definitely one of the most iconic in sports history. You know, the last couple of seconds he's counting down, and then do you believe in miracles and all of that. So what iconic Mets calls are we going to promote, extend, or trade here?
Excellent, Steve. Excellent.
Now, this is the good stuff.
Yeah, this is pod racing.
Content.
Now, this is podcasting.
Ah, there it is.
Just as as a quick FYI, the 3D re-release of The Phantom Menace that came out in like 2011 or so, they took that line out.
Terrible.
What?
Yeah,
that's the, whole,
I know.
That's the best part.
Why?
Of
because George Lucas meddles.
Hey,
I don't know why.
My other hot
things.
Take is that Phantom Menace is actually good.
I agree.
Steve
with that.
Might fight you. Oh
no!
Phantom Menace is objectively good, and then Attack of the Clones is just a train wreck. Anyway, what are the lines?
Anyway, so yeah, so first off, we have Howie Rose's call from September 2001. It's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run, Mike Piazza, and the Mets lead 3-2. Then we have Vin Scully's October 1986 call. Little roller up along first. Behind the bag, and it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it. And finally, we have Gary Cohen in June 2012. He struck him out. It has happened. In their 51st season, Johan Santana has thrown the first no-hitter in New York Mets history.
These are all good ones.
They're all, I know. This is one of the ones that's tough because...
Yeah, they're all good.
It's a shame that it's freaking Joe Buck on that Andy Chavez catch. Because that I was thinking that should be one of the moments, but the call is mediocre at best, unfortunately.
If we're going strictly on the call, I think I have my three.
Do share.
I think I'm going to extend Johan's no-hitter because Gary Cohen is the GOAT. Mm-hmm. And then I think I'm going to promote Vin Scully because he is also the GOAT. And Howie's been annoying me on Twitter recently. So... I can do without him, I guess. As talented as he is.
Mm-hmm.
Solely for that reason.
I think I agree. I do have a clarifying question. In that call of the no-hitter, there's like someone yelling yes as it happening, as it's happening.
Yeah.
Is
that
a Ron?
I think it was.
I don't know. I've never read that confirmed, but it sounds like he's selling yes and didn't mute himself quickly enough.
That's fine.
That
was actually me from my seat. At
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That was me from my couch in New Jersey.
So I was actually at a quiz bowl tournament. Yes, yes. I'm a nerd. And the games were going late, and I take out my phone after the fact, and my dad's texting me like, hey, no hitter in the whatever.
Dad's like, what jinx?
right. But then I couldn't find the game on TV, and I didn't actually see it happen live, unfortunately, which always bums me out. But it happened. That's the important thing. Anyway, I'm going to extend. I think I'm doing the same thing as Ken, just because the Piazza home run, the call never felt like it's not a particularly remarkable call.
Yeah,
if I
agree with that.
My eyes and think about that home run, what comes to mind immediately is the video of Piazza, you know,
right,
tall and upright, just blasting the ball out the center. I don't think about the audio at all.
I agree with that.
And like Vin's call, like the way his intonation changes, it's like behind the bag. It's like, oh, he fucked it up. Without saying that, obviously, because it's Vin Scully. And then Gary's,
behind the bag, he fucked it up.
He fucked it up. I just have like the visual in my head more than anything.
I'm extending Howie's Piazza call. That call for me is one of those things where I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing. It was the first time after 9/11 that me and my family went out to eat at a restaurant. My stepdad, he works for a federal agency that had an office at the World Trade Center, and he was there that day. Understandably, we were all freaked out a little. So it was the Elm Park Inn, which is not actually there anymore, one of those diner-type steakhouse restaurant places that thought it was fancier than it actually was. But my family, we went out with another family friend,
and their family, and we were at this restaurant, and I was watching the game from the booth that we were at, and the game was tied by the time we left, and I got home, and I go turn on the TV, and now they're losing. It's like, fucking Mets, come on, you guys, you gotta win this one. And Mike Piazza was at bat, and not 5-10 seconds later, that happens. So it's like, I will never forget that call, that moment. You know, it's iconic for obvious reasons, and obviously an awesome moment to begin with, but then the odds of that happening, I mean, if I cough, you know, if I stop, if I stop for whatever reason, you know, any little thing changes the timing of everything.
You stop at the fridge to get a Coke.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
You don't see it.
For me, I'm extending Scully, because I think one of the things that he does in that call that's really amazing is he does the call and then he lets the crowd tell the rest of the story mm-hmm. of what's happening. Like, I feel like a lot of announcers now, they'll make a great call and then they'll keep talking while, like, the crowd is losing it. And I want to hear...
And that's a high drive to left field, and that'll make it a 4-0 ball game.
Yeah, and it's like, you could stop and you could let the Mets fans who are losing their minds because they didn't... You know what I mean? Like part of the call for me is also the fact that he... stopped it at the right time and then continue talking at the right time again. And I think it's like really good. It's a really good mixture of audio and what's happening on the field. And then I'm going to promote the no hitter call, even though, like I said, I'm going to brag and I didn't hear it until way later because I was there. but like, it's like a good call. Like it's a very good no hitter call because it's like the, it has happened, has become like a kind of a Mets meme where like, someone will hit a double, and I'd be like, it has happened when it's the fifth inning. You know what I mean?
See, like, but Thomas, everything we'd make everything a meme. That's
you're not
this,
wrong.
That's what, like, this fan base does.
Like, there's a non-zero chance whenever Lindor extends, I'm going to tweet, it has happened, to the quote, you know what I mean, over the Passant tweet, because it's just kind of become...
I put at least even odds on that.
Yeah,
yeah, like, you have to now.
Like it's just kind of become a thing in Mets
Look,
land to say it
we've
has
lost
happened.
Our shit. When Yoenis Cespedes wore a bright yellow armband for a day.
We did.
Like,
did you
oh, well.
The rally parakeet?
Yeah, the rally parakeet. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
the
yeah.
parakeet. I do think I want to give an honorable mention to the Mets clinching the division in 15. The Tears of Joy for the 2015 New York Mets is really good. Because, like, Wilmer crying. But it was, like, a very good wraparound to the how the season went. I think it was a very...
Yeah, Gary's pretty great.
Yeah, he is.
He is. Definitely is.
After watching a bunch of Lindor highlights, I was like, oh, other teams listen to not good broadcasters because
yeah.
Cleveland's are not good.
Cleveland's not even the worst one out there.
They're rough.
I agree with your... I think it's a good phrase he tried to turn, but I actually don't love that call as a whole. My hot take.
The clinching division one? Or the,
Yeah. This is like, what he followed up with the Tears of Joy line with was like, eh. But the Tears of Joy line itself was good.
Mm. All right, well, you know what else is good? The fact that we did not have snow this weekend, and it's nice and sunny out.
Uh-huh. So far.
Yeah, so far. And it's cold, but it's sunny. And it's even nicer and sunnier in Point St. Lucie, and pitchers and catchers have reported to spring training. And like we were saying before, baseball is back, and that's really good. So first thing let's discuss this week are the non-roster invitees to spring training. So in addition to all the 40-man guys, the Mets also invited the following players to spring training. There are catchers Nick Meyer and Francisco Alvarez. There's shortstop Ryan Mauricio. There are third baseman Mark Vientos and Brett Beatty. Outfielder Pekar Armstrong. And right-handers Matthew Allen, Marcel Renteria, Riley Gilliam, and Tyler McGill. Obviously, Mauricio, Allen, Alvarez, Beatty, PCA, Vientos, those are literally our top prospects 1-6. So just by default, they're going to be exciting guys.
We know who reads the site.
Yeah. So, That leaves us with Gilliam, who we ranked at 25 this year, and then Nick Meyer, Marcel Renteria, and Tyler McGill, who we did not rank at all. So of those guys, do you think that they might open some eyes?
Like the only rhymes? One who has a chance to – not a chance, that's a little harsh. The one who I think has the highest ability to is Gilliam, and I think Rojas already shouted him out, saying he looks good so far. Obviously, it's super early. But the pen is still kind of – like, there's still spots that are kind of open with Lugo being hurt. Like, the bottom of it could – is kind of up in the air. So I don't – I'm not saying he's going to break camp or whatever, but – he's going to have a chance to be in the competition, and it'll be fun to see him actually compete.
Yeah. That's why he ranked. That's why we ranked him 25.
Yeah.
He has. I mean, not that college closers usually work out, but you know, he had the stuff to work there. He was a legitimate pitching prospect before that. It's not. It wouldn't be like mind-boggling if he was actually good.
I'd put even odds on him being like a decent seventh inning guy.
Good. Sure. I think.
No,
that's
maybe like a middle reliever, not like a high level.
But that's fine. I mean,
even odds on that he gets the curveball over the plate enough to, have it play.
I mean, you literally just need him to be somewhat viable, and then he's just another useful up-and-down guy until he's out of options. And then at that point, I don't know what happens, but for now, I think it's – I'd rather have him than Paul Sewald, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that that's a particularly high bar.
Nick Meyer, not really too out there. More of a defense-oriented guy than an offensive catcher, but I mean, the catching situation is a little convoluted. And after after McCann and Nido, there's really nothing going on. You think that Meyer has a chance to?
Depends on how good his defense is.
Yeah,
because I don't know if he'll ever hit, but if he I'm not saying he's Jeff Mathis, but that dude has been in the league for a long time because he plays defense, you know?
Let's be honest, he's been in the league a lot longer than he should have been.
Oh, no, I'm not saying you're wrong, but, teams value that. So yeah. I think teams are just going to – if he could play defense at a high level, he'll have a third catcher, backup catcher job for a long time. So we'll have to see. But I think that spot's open, the third catcher spot, like you were alluding to.
Yeah, because the other guy on the roster, Mazika,
not
exactly what you want.
No.
Yeah,
the Mets literally transitioned him off of catcher, so that's should be telling.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't understand why he's still here and Ollie Sanchez isn't.
Me too.
Because, like, you're hoping that Nick Meyer is Ollie Sanchez.
Unless why they're going to sign Rene Rivera again or something. Like,
hey, I mean, I would have preferred to have both Rene Rivera and Ollie Sanchez.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, cash considerations is pretty good, though, right?
You're getting my cash considerations jersey.
It's hard to put a glove on the corners of the Bills, so I don't know how it's going to catch.
Yeah, we don't have the technology yet.
Yeah.
How about Renteria or McGill? Either one of you guys, any of you guys think either one of them could impress, open some eyes, put their names on the map?
Who knows?
That's
the level of guys we're at.
Yeah, we're at very much.
Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm high on McGill. I think he actually might get some major league playing time this year.
Really?
This year?
This year. If we have it this year, I'm assuming we will, but he's already kind of old. He's 25. He's turning 26 in July. The numbers were never really that great, but they were never really particularly bad either. Like the worst that he had like a 5 ERA in Binghamton last year in like 3 innings or something like that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, he had real solid, let's say between 250 and 350 ERAs between Brooklyn, Columbia, St. Lucie, all the different stops that he had with pretty okay peripherals. The stuff is good. His fastball is like 92 to 96 with a high spin rate and a slider that is inconsistent but flashes average to above average. You stick a guy like that in the pen where he can live at the top of that velocity band and really focus on that slider and getting it more consistent. And that's a solid, you know, cromulent fastball slider bullpen guy, which the Mets have had a lot of success with in recent years. He's a big guy. He's 6'6", 230, so, you know, good to see. He impressed me when I saw him in Brooklyn, like, 2 years ago, and then Columbia Brooklyn 3 years ago, and then Columbia 2 years ago, because we didn't have it last year. But I think he's a guy, and he was also, like, in that kind of mushy, amorphous area at, like, 25 to 30 when we were making up our prospect lists. He was in consideration for me at that point. Mm-hmm. I think that he's a guy that might, you know, have a role in the future out of the bullpen.
He's one of the spin rate darlings, if I recall correctly. I mean, look, a big big body dude, the strikeouts are there. It's just a matter of whether it works against the upper minors. It also seems like he just gets hit hard, right? Mm-hmm. He either strikes you out or you smash it. I don't know what that means exactly, whether that's something that's sustainable or whether that's just noise.
As the world changes, so does the way we do business. In any scenario, flexibility is a must for companies, but this year they've had to be extra flexible. The renaissance of remote work, the endless pivots, you name it. So when it comes to finding new employees during this time, you can be thankful that ZipRecruiter is making hiring faster and easier. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job boards with one click, expanding your search for top-notch employees. Then ZipRecruiter's powerful technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and then actively invites those 5-star candidates to apply. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOX. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Chicano Squad tells the story of Houston's first ever all-Latino homicide squad, formed in the 1970s to face a growing number of unsolved murders in their own community.
None of us knew what we were up against.
A story of 5 young officers torn between the neighborhoods that raised them.
I had a Mexican flag on my desk, and they told me, hey, the lieutenant doesn't want that Mexican flag over there.
And the badges they wore.
Some of my friends stopped talking to me.
Against impossible odds, they faced murders.
As soon as she walks outside, they shot her 14 times.
Cartels.
The Colombians were, man, they would execute you, kill you.
Kidnappings.
One morning they woke up and the baby was gone.
And more.
They just flew this guy in from Colombia and he's tracking you down. He wants to kill you.
But nobody wants to hear a story about a homicide squad that failed, right? My name is Cristela Alonso, and this is the story of the Chicano Squad. Listen to Chicano Squad now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
I mean, it's good to have this type of wild card around. That's the most I think I'm comfortable saying. I don't know. You definitely have a better read on his potential here than any of us. So,
well, like you said, these are definitely guys that you want to have around because these are the kinds of guys that you turn into middle relievers instead of having to go out and either sign them or trade for them like the Mets have kind of been doing over the last couple of years.
And relievers have come from weirder places in terms of prospects and stuff like that. Sometimes guys just pop.
Kenley Jansen was a catcher. That's a pretty weird place for a reliever.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Gonna go out on a limb and say that McGill was never a catcher given that he's 6'7".
No.
Maybe a first baseman.
One guy that is not going to be attending spring training.
Oh, no.
Is, fortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective, I guess, is because he recently retired. So we will not be blessed in 2021 by Tim Tebow getting a call up to the majors.
Pour one out. And by
once again,
one,
our prospect list takes a hit.
Mm-hmm. Pour one out, and by one, I mean some holy water.
Of course, some water turned into wine.
Yeah, exactly.
He heard that the Houston Texans quarterback job might be opening up, so yeah.
But I think the suckiest part is that we're going to be robbed of the home run that we know he was going to hit, because he hit his first at-bat with Columbia, he hit a home run. His first at-bat with the Rumble Ponies, he hit a home run. So you know that he's going to hit a home run with the Mets, his one and
he's
only at bat.
He's swinging with God, Steve.
Exactly. He will be one of the few. He would have been one of the few to have a perfect 1-1-4 batting line, you know, in one at bat.
So conversely, if there's an alternate reality where he plays an entire September for the Wilpons and he goes like 1-for-20, and the one is like a total bomb, like over the home run apple to dead center.
Which, I mean, he could have. Like, he's got the raw pop.
He's a gigantic human being.
Basically, when I think about Tebow, I think of if he didn't stop playing baseball, could he have been a baseball player? Because it's really impressive to miss that much of your life playing baseball, like a decade plus, and then just walk into a minor league team and make it to double A. Like, he was not a bad player in the lower minors. He couldn't hit triple A because it was just too advanced at that point, but like unironically impressive.
I know we make we're making jokes about it, but some people have like actually criticized him for doing this. And it'd be one thing if it was a very obvious publicity stunt, but that really doesn't seem to have been the case. He put the work in consistently. Yeah. He improved consistently, and everyone's going to continue to meme about it, I'm sure, because, he couldn't even make the majors. Like, do you understand how hard hitting double-A pitching is?
There's college kids who will play their entire lives and get drafted and be a worse hitter in the minors than Tim Tebow, who was a quarterback for most of his life. You know what I mean?
And don't give me any of this, he's taking the opportunity away from someone else crap, right? Like, that would be fair if, again, he wasn't putting the work in, but he's putting the work in and he has the physical tools. He has as much right to try as anyone else at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't specifically state why he was retiring, just that he didn't think that at this point in his life he couldn't give baseball his 100%. And given his background, you know, he needed to commit himself 100% in order to not look foolish. So
yeah. He's probably going to end up at, like, the SEC Network full-time or something.
Oh, yeah, he'll definitely have some
coach. That's where he was before.
Yeah, but I'm assuming, like, he got a better gig or something, or, like...
Yeah, he can now cover baseball as well.
Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah. He's going to be the color commentator for the College Baseball World Series.
As someone who is currently watching the Florida Gators play an extra innings against Miami, I look forward to Tim Tebow calling this game in the future.
Hell yeah.
The funniest thing
I do want to say... Oh, go ahead, Lucas.
The funniest thing is that if we were going to talk about Tebow's skill set, like, hey, I'm a former NFL quarterback trying to play baseball. What do you think my strengths are? Well, probably pretty athletic. You might have good raw pop from the athleticism and you're kind of jacked. You probably move pretty well and your arm's going to be great. He had like a 20 grade arm in the outfield.
Yeah, his arm was awful.
What the hell?
Typical Tebow.
Do you guys think he would have made the big leagues if not for that hamate injury?
Yes.
Yeah, no, because the timing kind of screwed it all up for him.
He absolutely
was 100% calling him up.
Sold like immediately.
Absolutely would have been called up as like a weird. Bad in September meme here, watch some games type
gotta
thing.
Get that September gate.
Yeah.
Gotta sell the Tebow shirts.
Jeff would be like putting together a slideshow about how smart he is for calling up Tebow and presenting it to I don't know who. Like, man, I called up a popular player who was actually bad.
I don't think that Tebow would have really gotten much playing time this year. The 2021 Syracuse Mets, unlike Syracuse Mets of past, probably have a little bit more outfield depth.
I actually wonder if that's why he retired.
I think it is, because he said, I mean, obviously you have to read behind between the lines and everything, but if he can't commit himself 100%, it could be personal stuff, obviously. But also, if he's not playing 100%, you know, if he's not constantly practicing and not constantly playing, he's not going to be good enough to hang with everyone else, you know? And I feel like he would not want to, you know, all things considered, he does seem like a decent guy who did not want his place on the team to be just because of his name, and he always put in the work and everything like that, and given the lack of playing time that he probably would have been subject to this year, I don't think he would have gotten enough reps and enough practice and everything to really justify his place on the team.
He probably saw, like, the Mets sign actual, like, outfield depth and looked at the depth chart of Syracuse and been like, am I going to do this to be, like, the fifth outfielder on our AAA team? Like,
exactly.
And then you can go out and say, I can't commit myself full-time because that looks better than I suck.
Like, yes, exactly.
like I don't think he's necessarily going to go out in his retirement, not press conference, statement, and be like, well, I'm just not very good, and the Mets signed a lot of better players than me, so I'm retiring. You know, like,
It's not even a lie, though. It's like, no, hey, it's not. I recognize my skill level isn't adequate, and I'm going on 34 years old. I don't have the passion for this, given my inherent skill level, to ride around on buses in the minor leagues to be a fifth outfielder. And
during a pandemic.
Right. It's like, all right, dude, you're 34. You don't need the money. You gave it your best shot. Thanks a lot. Yep.
We get it.
Yeah. That's probably what it really was.
Yeah. I mean, right now, Syracuse outfield is probably going to be Quinn Brody, Janushri Fargus, Malik Smith, Drew Ferguson, and most likely Khalil Lee. Five guys competing for three spots. So if you include Tebow in there, and they're all fighting for playing time, Tebow has about a 33 1/3 chance of getting penciled in on any given day. Then you add Jose.
Even if Kamara gets options, because that's possible.
Right. Then you add Jose Martinez, maybe Guillermo Heredia, Almora into the mix. They might get, you know, theoretically sent to Syracuse. So Tebow's, his chance of playing drastically goes down. You take his 33rd chance of playing, subtract Brody and Fargus, all those other guys, basically means Tebow has negative 141 2/3 chance of getting playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the numbers just don't lie.
I mean, Lee is all, like, if Lee's in AAA, he's playing every day. If Almora's in AAA, he's playing every day.
Or Martinez, he'd play every day too.
He might play first.
But still, even if they stick him in the outfield.
Yeah.
For what, like, just to get the at-bats in.
Yeah, and then you're choosing between Smith, Ferguson, and Fargus. I wouldn't be surprised if they send Janushri to AA or Ferguson to AA, one of them, just to fill the spot. Yeah.
You know what I think the best part of that was? I said Tebow has a negative 141 2/3 chance of playing, and nobody batted an eye.
No, it's because it was accurate.
Well, I mean, I was like, yeah, that's about right. So,
basically, for Lucas and Ken, there's a wrestler out there named Scott Steiner who is.
Oh boy, here we go.
It's real good. It's good stuff.
He's not too competent on a microphone, and he just kind of babbles and says funny things. So after this is over, I implore you to look up the Steiner Math promo.
Math promo.
Really? Yes.
How many brain cells am I going to lose watching this?
Oh, so many. Especially you, I think you're going to get mad. Not mad, but you'll be like, what the hell is this?
Totally.
I pulled it up, and I'm looking at a picture of this guy.
Can you say what it is again? I want to Google it as well.
Oh, no.
Steiner Math.
How many drugs is this? Here's a question and an answer to the question. How many drugs is this guy on? Yes.
Awesome.
Oh.
Let's go on.
All right, let's get to some of the Wilponery of the week. And I think that our Wilponery is twofold this week. We have two winners. It's a situation where, you know, one guy needs the other for the Wilponery to happen. So our winners this week are Ted Cruz and Sean Hannity, who I feel like could win a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
But, easily, you know, top seed entries.
Yeah, I mean, Ted Cruz, obviously, for being Ted Cruz in the first place.
Yeah, and then buffoon.
Yes, and then B, for literally doing the most elitist, out-of-touch, get-the-guillotines type thing possible, and, you know, fleeing for Cancun when Texas is literally without power, without water.
All he's doing is trying to save his kids from a third-world situation by crossing a border.
Exactly. And now, he was on an interview with Sean Hannity on Fox News, and they had a very... with Fred Wilpon, Andy Martino moment where Sean Hannity was trying to carry Fred Cruz's water and Cruz basically just gave himself up, which is hilarious. Hannity was basically trying to say, like, you know, okay, you were just going to Cancun to accompany your family, make sure everybody gets safe, and you'd come back and everything would be good. And Cruz was basically... made a straight comment about how he was going to be staying there and working remotely for the time being. So, what a dummy. Like, he was given an out, and he couldn't even get there, which is a totally Wilponian thing to do.
It's not just amazing how bad these people are, but just how stupid they are. It's incredible.
Yeah, I know. You'd think if they have these positions of power and they have these shady connections that, you know, they use and get enriched by, like, if these people had half a brain, like, we'd really be fucked even more so than we are.
Yep.
All right. Well, if anybody has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVajos343. Ken is at KenLevin91. And Thomas is at SadMidseasonSZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you all for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.